This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Shaoning and Roshan Kunnison. It has just gone past 7:36. It is the Thursday, the 24th of December. And in about half an hour, we're going to have the breakfast grill. And this morning, I'll be speaking to Mr. Ooi Lian Hin, who's the chairman of the Shipping Association of Malaysia. Now, we do know that COVID-19 caused unprecedented supply chain blockages as the world went into a lockdown. Now, the shipping industry has actually since then recovered and, in fact, rallied. But there have been some knock-on side effects of the pandemic that are still felt today, such as the dramatic increase in freight charges. So I'm going to be discussing that with him, and as well as the policy measures needed to keep the Malaysian shipping industry resilient, and a little bit about the recent cabotage incident. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be happening after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. But in the meantime, Roshan, we're going to be talking about the financial sector.
Yes, we are. And unlike the financial crisis in 2008, Shaoning, this year, the financial sector was not as badly impacted as other sectors by the COVID-19 pandemic. There was no major freeze up in the essential markets as governments and central banks took quick action to ensure liquidity. And there was no major financial firm that had to be bailed out by taxpayers, unlike the situation 10, 12 years ago. Despite surviving the tough economic conditions this year, however, financial firms still face a rocky road ahead, even in the face of a global economic recovery.
Yeah, so for some insights into the outlook for financial markets in 2021, we speak to Stephen Leslie, lead analyst for the financial services at the Economist Intelligence Unit, or EIU. Now, good morning, Stephen. The financial sector weathered the pandemic this year relatively well compared to other areas of the economy. So what accounts for the sector's resilience?
Well, there's a few things, and one of the most important, and probably the first one, was that central banks were very quick to intervene to keep all the markets working. There were some markets that sort of froze up a little bit, but some quick intervention, resolved the problem. So we didn't see some of the problems that we saw, a decade ago when some markets really weren't working anymore. And, securities and et cetera, derivatives also could not be sold. So that was one thing. The other thing is, and I think this is important to note because hardly anybody does, is that there's been a big improvement in the basic standards, both for banks and insurers, especially for banks, but also for insurers since that previous crisis. They have a lot more capital. They have a lot more liquid balance sheets. So that's number two. And then the third thing, and this is sort of a long-term trend, is that most kind of financial institutions don't rely as much as they used to on person-to-person interaction because all these digital channels, whether it's mobile or online, on a PC or whatever it is, have replaced those things. So, the impact would have been a lot greater, in previous decades when a lot of that stuff was done face-to-face, which is what everybody feared, especially early on in the pandemic.
Although the global economy is expected to recover next year, conditions for financial institutions might actually get tougher. What are the challenges you see for the sector in 2021?
Yeah, so one of the big things is that we expect to see a rise in bad loans as a lot of these official programs expire that allowed lenders to forestall bankruptcies and extend the maturities on credit. So if you look at bad loan numbers right now, they look about the same as at the end of last year. But as those programs, official programs come off and accounting standards go back to what they're supposed to be, we expect to see a big rise in those non-performing credits. So that'll be one thing. That'll vary a lot depending upon the economy, however. So the other thing that's going to be important is that these low rates are going to last, and that is going to lead to really thin lending margins. So really thin margins between deposit rates and lending rates. And that's going to be tough for firms that depend on those spreads like banks or also insurers that depend on, decently high rates for their investment returns. But we do expect financial firms in general to join the kind of stock price boom that so far has mostly been a technology-driven trend. And that's going to happen as the vaccines reach more people and economies begin to get back to normal and rebound.
And Stephen, how will ultra-low interest rates impact financial institutions, especially given we are expected to see this environment persist for several more years?
Actually, all the way out through our forecast period of 2025. So we're looking here really at 2021. we expect them over the next 5 years. So the effects are going to be really disparate, actually, and I think this is something that isn't highlighted enough. Some firms are actually going to do pretty well in that environment. You know, capital markets operators, for example, are going to be raising new bond issues or maybe bringing firms to market in equity issues. There's certain mortgage lenders or other kinds of consumer lenders might do well as people rush to take out more loans, you know, with the late rates so low. And also fund managers of various sorts that have like low-cost funds or funds that are well-positioned for that kind of environment. On the other hand, other financial firms are going to really have a really tough time. And I'm thinking here primarily about your kind of traditional lender that takes deposits and makes loans to companies and to households, that it's going to be tough for them because their margins are going to be a lot thinner. Also, as I mentioned before, insurers relying on bond yields, and then a lot of the poorly positioned fund managers that have either charge high fees that people are paying a lot of attention to now, or manage a type of asset that just isn't going to function well in that environment.
What levels of stimulus do you anticipate from governments next year, taking into account that unprecedented scale of support given this year already?
So governments have been, actually, there has been unprecedented support, it's true, but some places have not provided that because, you know, their leadership did not feel that they could do that. What I've been arguing and what we're arguing is the governments are probably going to pull back from stimulus too soon. The United States almost went that way before this package was just passed. So we think governments will pull back too quickly. They're going to be worried about their debt levels, their deficit and debt levels rising. Those are concerns, but low interest rates have allowed governments to borrow money very cheaply. So even though levels of debt are rising sharply, you know, the carrying cost of it has not risen quite so sharply. So we think it's appropriate for them, in most cases, if they can, to maintain the stimulus to get the economy revved up. Now, I want to make a distinction here with central banks. From monetary policy, we expect most central banks will keep rates low. And many of them, not all, but many of them, like in Europe or Japan or the United States or other developed economies, less often in emerging markets, will pursue these quantitative easing and other unorthodox policies. And they can continue to do so until inflation returns. And there's no sign of that yet. So the monetary stimulus will continue, but the fiscal stimulus will fall off quicker than it ought to.
Thank you for your time. That was Stephen Leslie, Lead Analyst for Financial Services at the EIU, giving us his views on the financial sector, which seems to have weathered the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, relatively well. Unlike in 2008 during the Great Financial Crisis, I still have visions of people packing up their stuff at Lehman Brothers because it literally collapsed overnight due to the weight of the derivative book that it had. So this time, like he pointed out, banks have much better standards of liquidity, much better capital position, so we don't see that same pressures. Very quickly, what were your key takeaways, Roshan?
I was particularly paying attention to the bad loan situation he was talking about, right? That right now we haven't seen the true extent of any bad loans because there have been various support programs in the US and around the world and even in Malaysia. So that's something to pay attention to as that support gets being pulled back, right? And how that affects the bank's loan books, but also that with low interest rates going forward, that affects lenders, pure play lenders, and the insurance players who rely on fixed income for returns.
Yeah, but there are some winners though, nonetheless, especially those who are very busy or active in the capital markets, because I think there'll be a lot of capital raising. But up next, we'll be speaking to Nigel Wong, Honorary Secretary General of the Malaysian Association of Tour and Travel Agents, on the country's 10-year national tourism policy, which was just announced yesterday. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.